Great to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, we're talking a little bit, switching gears with you and talk about biofuels now and enzymes. And what do enzymes have to do with biofuels? I think there's, as we know, there's a as our energy sources are depleted, there's a global need for affordable, sustainable energy. And here in Wisconsin, we've got some world-class researchers doing some world-class research on that. And some of our researchers are looking at enzymes and the role they might play in biofuels. And one of them is with us right now, Brian Fox, professor in the UW-Madison Department of Biochemistry. And he is a project leader in the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, or GLBRC. Why did I start with B? GLBRC. So he's with us. Brian, thank you for taking time to come by today. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
And John Greenler has been with us many times. He's director of the Education and Outreach Program for the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, or GLBRC. John, great to see you again, too.
Great to be back, Larry. Thank you.
And I'll turn your microphone on, and then it'll work better. Once it's turned on, it always works better, I find.
There we go.
Oh, man. So, and turning to you as you listen in, what questions might you have about bioenergy? You heard about enzymes as a tool to produce bioenergy? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment, photo, anything right there at The Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Well, let's start with a basic explanation here. What is an enzyme?
Okay, well, let's see. Let's all think back to our basic biology classes, and we certainly know about DNA, which is the molecule that encodes the genome. Mm-hmm. And within the genome, there are certain genes that encode for proteins. And the nucleic acid is turned into protein, which is composed of amino acid. Mm-hmm. And certain proteins have a folded shape that allows them to do catalytic reactions. And that's what an enzyme is.
Wow.
And so what do enzymes do then? I mean, these are basically the molecules that do everything that we see associated with life. They make your fingernails grow. They deposit the amino acids into your protein to make your hair grow. They digest our food. They do everything that is involved in a chemical reaction in life. To speed it up and gain control over it.
Wow.
So we owe a lot to enzymes. They're working constantly, even as we sit here, although we don't maybe
We're not quite aware of it, are we, John? Yeah.
No, and there are quite a lot of them, thousands. I mean, you look at a map of how they all connect together to create our metabolic pathways, you know, it makes the Chicago interstate network look really simple and straightforward.
Well, and they're used, how are they used in other kinds of fields?
Well, so a classic example most of us know about is our dishwashing detergent.
Okay.
It has a substantial fraction by weight of various enzymes that degrade fats, degrade stains, degrade carbohydrate to help our dishes get clean. It needs less water now. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of us realize dishwashers use less water than they used to. The dish soaps, the preparations are much more effective at getting dishes clean, our clothes clean also. Part of that is that enzymes have been identified that degrade certain kind of molecules, stains or other things, and so help our clothes get clean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not have to use hot water.
In many cases,
Yeah, in many cases.
Yeah, so some of them really are specialists at breaking down certain molecules. Other enzymes, you know, really are very specific for building up certain compounds as well. And so the pharmaceutical industry is another example of where, you know, a lot of enzymes are used to make very specific molecules that are really key in our, you know, our current medical, you know, system.
Mm-hmm. Well, how in the heck did you get interested in enzymes as a in relationship to biofuels?
Well, so I,
Brian,
originally, so I've always been, since I was in college, always interested in biology and chemical catalysis. And before I went to graduate school, I was fortunate enough to be involved in a program that was studying the ways that pollutants are degraded in the environment by bacteria. This was around the time of the Valdez oil spill. And so there was a lot of discussion at that time about, oh, microbes in the environment will clean up the oil. And I became interested in that. And so as I studied that, I realized the, you know, the fundamental agents for doing this breakdown were enzymes. And that's what got me interested in this. And I've been involved in enzyme research on specific enzymes, and then more broadly in a National Institutes of Health funded initiative to essentially take all of the genes from the human genome and figure out a way to turn them into proteins and then solve their three-dimensional structure so we can better learn what they do. And so that was the background that I had when I came into the biofuels world.
Wow, that's pretty cool stuff.
Also very complicated.
Yeah, very, very complicated. Can you give us a specific example of your previous research?
Well, so one of my favorite lines of research, and I'm still doing this now with funding from the National Science Foundation, is a study of an enzyme from a bacterium that was originally isolated from the Colorado River in Austin, Texas. And what that bacterium does is it grows on a molecule called toluene, which is an aromatic compound. It's a constituent of gasoline and others. And so this bacterium grows on this toluene as its sole source of carbon and energy. And the studies I've done on that enzyme have revealed it's not just one protein, it's actually six proteins. And it has iron, it contains iron atoms, it uses molecular oxygen, and it also uses electrons to do this reaction. And so all of these different proteins have their own unique shape, and they have to interact together in very specific ways to accomplish this multi-stage reaction. And that's always been a fascination to me, and I use broad range of tools to study these interactions that lead to the catalytic result that we want to achieve.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool stuff too, isn't it?
So biofuels, I think this is now the kind of, when the GLBRC was funded in, what was that, 2008 now, I think?
Over 4 years ago, yep.
Yeah, I had never worked in this area. But I had worked in technologies to do high-throughput cloning and making proteins so that they could be studied. And I pretty quickly understood that the issue of taking apart biomass, which is the source of biofuels originally, corn stover or switchgrass or wood chips or other materials, is a very complicated problem because biomass is made of many, many different kinds of molecules. So it's made of cellulose and it's made of hemicellulose, it's made of lignin, and any of those bonds that are broken in nature by living organisms are broken by enzymes. And so what John said earlier, thousands and thousands of proteins, that's indeed true. There can be thousands of variants of these enzymes from different organisms, from fungi, from microbes. And part of the goal of the GLBRC research is to understand the key role of each of these different enzymes, no matter where they come from, and then how to put them together in combinations that are most efficient to convert, say, corn stover into a sugar liquid that can be fed to another bacteria that will turn it into the fuel. And so,
very cool stuff. By the way, if you'd like to join in here, I haven't given the number here in a long time. I should do that. If you have a question or comment, I hope you'll join in. It's fascinating to me. I hope it is to you as well, as we talk about the use of enzymes in biofuel research, and hopefully putting it, getting it to a very practical use someday in the field. We'll learn about that as we visit with our two guests today, John Greenler and Brian Fox. But join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. We'd love to hear from you. So this is pretty interesting stuff. How are you going about the research here?
Okay, well, so at the GLBRC, what we are doing is we have a project with my group and then another scientist in the microbiology department, Cameron Curry, Cameron's group, their focus is to study bacteria and fungi that are associated with insects. And so these are the classes of insects that we're interested in are leaf-cutting ants from Central America,
okay.
Leaf-cutters, the mountain pine beetle, which is, if you live in the western part of the United States, you know that this is basically a devastating pest that's destroying all the forests. There's another type of a pest called a Cyrex wood wasp that is now infesting the northeast of the United States and is endemic in many parts of the world. And so our interest there was, how do the microbes that associate with these insects, either in their gut or on their surface, contribute to the destruction of natural destruction of biomass? I mean, this is going on right now, and what we want to find out is what's contributing.
And we'll learn some more about that as we visit with our guests. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're zeroing in on biofuels for the next half hour and talking about enzymes and what enzymes have to do with biofuels. There's a lot of research going on, and it's being conducted by Brian Fox, one of the professors doing the research, professor in the UW-Madison Department of Biochemistry, and is a GLBRC, or Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center project leader. John Greenler with us as well, director of the education and outreach programs for the GLBRC. Questions for them, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post a question on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Steve in Cambria has been waiting a long time, so let's go right to Steve here. Steve, thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
You bet. I wonder if the gentleman could talk about how their work with enzymes has the possibility of enhancing the efficiency of corn as a biofuel. I'm used to hearing over and over again about how there are more efficient crops, but I wonder if their work is able to move that particular crop, and of course it's so important to us here in this state, up the ladder a bit.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting question. Brian Fox.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Thanks for your question. That's a really good one. So let's first talk about in the biofuels research that we're doing, we want to distinguish between corn grain, which is a starch product and actually quite easy to convert to fuels by very few enzymes. What we're really interested in is having access to the cellulosic portion of the corn, so corn stover. And when I just noticed my good friend and colleague Kevin Schinner sent us in a little email comment here. Wisconsin farmers, they know what biomass is. They've been growing it for years. Mm-hmm. And so that's corn stover and other agricultural waste products. Those materials, to the degree that we could remove some of that from the field stream and convert it into fuels, is the target. It doesn't compete with food. So that's an important goal of our center in our overall view of we need to create a sustainable industry. And so the way that biofuels get taken apart is by enzymes is a two-stage process. First, the material is produced in on a field by a farmer, needs to be harvested, and then it needs to undergo what is called a pretreatment, a chemical pretreatment. Now, our center is really interested in the idea of using alkaline pretreatments, which will soften up the plant tissue so that enzymes have better access, and we can increase the rate of conversion to sugars. Right? So that's the goal of a two-stage process. And if we can have a match of the type of chemical pretreatment that we do with customized blends of enzymes that are responsive to the type of biomass, so corn stover may be different than switchgrass, than wood chips, that's our vision of how we would increase the efficiency.
Hmm. Yeah, so that stover is everything that's left over above ground from that plant after you take the grain. So it's the stem, it's the leaves, it's even the cob that remains after you take the grain off of the ear. So there's a lot of material there. Some of it, you know, as Brian was saying, needs to go back to the soil to add organic matter, to keep some nutrient levels up. But it's clear that a significant portion of that material is really available, you know, for making biofuels.
Mm-hmm.
So would you say with the kind of advances that you're making that we're not needing to worry about converting to a different, more efficient crop for this kind of thing?
John, take this first.
John, go ahead. Just start with you first.
That's a great question. I think really we need to look at a diversity of opportunities in terms of where we're going to get that biofuel biomass. So what are these cropping systems going to be? Clearly, we're already growing a lot of corn. We need that grain to fill, you know, to feed our growing populations. And we're going to have that residue material, you know, that corn stover from that crop. At the same time, you know, there are other lands, what we call marginal lands, for example, where it's really not appropriate to grow corn or other annual crops. We want to be planting a perennial crop that's going to hold the soil, that might be more water efficient. Any of a number of different reasons that you would want to plant a perennial. And so switchgrass is very similar in terms of its biomass characteristics to corn stover, and really has a lot of advantages in terms of certain agricultural areas. And so switchgrass, I think, will be, or even better would be, a perennial polyculture type system where you might have switchgrass and some legumes would be fixing nitrogen. And so having something really which would, really replicate a lot of what we see in terms of services from a native prairie, where you might have maybe five or six or a dozen different species. And you can take all of that above ground material late in the fall, early in the winter, and once again, be able to convert that material, the cellulosic material, which is all that cell wall matter, and convert it into these liquid biofuels.
Mm. There you go. Steve, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Laura in Madison, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Laura.
Hello. Pardon the cold, but I wanted to talk about enzymes because they're my favorite proteins. And you kind of, I don't know if your audience understands exactly what it is enzymes are doing, and it's all about energy. It's like trying to push a car up a big hill. You have to use a lot of energy. What the enzymes do is kind of make the hill smaller so that you don't have to use as much energy to make the reaction, the chemical reaction, happen. And it's interesting, you know, you mentioned a few of the things about trying to get enzymes to work together and stuff, but enzymes are real choosy about their environment. They need a certain temperature. They need certain acidic or basic chemicals to be with them. They need the substrate, the feedstock for the reaction needs to be exactly the right concentration, or they're just not happy. So then when you try to combine them, boy, it gets really complicated. And I just wanted the public to know how complicated this is and why it hasn't happened already.
Well, that's actually a very good comment. You said it better than I could ever say it.
I think maybe we need to recruit you to teach in the biochemistry department here on campus. Yeah, well done. That's great.
I'd love to do it.
Laura, I tell you what, that was great. That was a wonderful explanation. You should write that whole explanation out and send it to the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. Post it on their website. My golly, that was great. Mitch in Green Bay, though, has something, too, so we want to go there. Hi, Mitch.
Hello. I wanted to know, are you interacting with the people that are pushing using algae as a biomass and using that and using your enzymes and breaking down the biomass of algae?
Oh.
So that's an interesting question. I know that we are in general not looking at algae, and part of the reason is we're here in the Midwest and we have a lot of corn stover, and so that becomes a priority for us. I think algae are also being used a lot to be more a delivery, an agent to make hydrogen photosynthetically as an alternative type of fuel. But there's a lot of work going on that out in Colorado, I know, and other places around the country.
Yeah, Mitch, you're right. There's kind of two different opportunities there with algae. One is to grow algae just as a source of bulk biomass that you could then convert into biofuels. But then, as Brian was saying, it's really research, which I think is really further down the pike to say, can we use algae essentially as, biological, factories at the cellular level that might produce some very specific oils, for example, that we could use as direct replacements for, diesel, et cetera. But really, they're frequently called third-generation biofuels, first generation being where we are today, making ethanol from corn grain. Here in GLBRC, we're really much more focused on this cellulosic material and trying to convert that into fuels. That would be second generation, and the third generation might be algae. There's a lot of big hurdles to be cleared on that one, though. But it's an interesting story. You're right.
Thanks, Mitch, for calling. Tom in Minocqua will turn to you next. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Say, my question is, what's your time estimate in terms of when we'll have a commercially viable product out there that will efficiently crack the cellulosic bond on all of this biomass that we have? And I'll take your comments off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for calling. What do you think, Brian Fox?
Well, I think that DuPont is going to start running a commercial pilot plant in Tennessee in the next year or so. And they're using switchgrass, I think, there. Or is it corn?
Either corn stover and/or switchgrass. Yeah. I can't
so this is which. This is ethanol from cellulosic material now, and I think Brazil is really coming along very well. A company in Canada, Iogen, is also running a demonstration plant now where they're able to produce enough fuels to run cars, and so it's certainly coming.
There's a lot of variables that go into trying to make that prediction. Some of it is the technology and the research advancements which we're working on. Some of it also has to do with, the economy. How much is the fossil fuel going to cost in the future, and where are the break even, trade-offs there? Government policies, can have a really significant impact on this as well. So, I think there are a number of different companies which are really poised. That I think they're there, they're almost there, and we're kind of in a situation almost where we've got a number of different opportunities kind of right at the starting line. And I think any of a number of different developments could really cascade this forward quite promptly.
You think
I think that's right.
Think 10 years ahead, you know, what it's going to be like in 10 years. It's probably going to be, I would hope, quite a bit different and, yeah. and much further advanced.
I think that's
I think that's absolutely true. I think we'll be using a quarter of the enzyme loading that we use now for cellulosic fuels, probably. There will be plants operating in a number of places in the U.S. Whether wood may be a quite difficult problem, but the grasses, mm-hmm. I think, will come along really quickly.
And I think, you know, it was coming back to Laura's, basic explanation of enzymes and talking about, you know, being able to get that car over the hill, you know, by making these enzyme systems better, we're really talking about more efficiency. We won't need as much enzyme, and those enzymes will do a better job of that conversion going from that complex biomass to the sugars that we can then use to make biofuels. So, you know, when you scale that up, that adds up into a lot of energy efficiency and also a lot of economy as well. So it's kind of interesting to think about as we tweak with molecules, we have the potential to have a really large scale impact in terms of where we get our energy from in this country.
Well, we have some email questions and some Facebook questions. By the way, if you'd like to phone in, we have some open lines. Get you on really quickly at 1-800-642-1234. But let's turn to the email. Dave in Madison, the immense biodiversity of the rainforest and sheer biomass recycling that occurs in such locations. Is there any effort to experiment with species that are discovered in these regions? The rainforest regions. Do the countries which contribute such insects have rights to them? How about exploring funding from different places which fund rainforest exploration conservation? Do they get royalties? Raising a whole bunch of questions here.
Yeah, well, so I think first thing we can say is that, yes, the rainforest and tropical areas are obviously of high interest to a lot of people around the world as sources of enzymes. So, and in our own center, the leaf cutter ants that we work on come from Costa Rica. The issues of royalties and other, you know, intellectual property rights and such, I don't know, so I can't speak to that. It wouldn't surprise me if there are these kind of thoughts and concerns, because, you know, enzymes are actually a very big global market. People have invested a lot in discovering and producing them, and so it would be quite logical that that kind of activity is going on also.
I just going to add another rainforest connection, which I think, you know, clearly these are distant lands, but we really have a global impact. And so earlier there was some mention about climate change, and rainforests really lock up a huge amount of carbon forest for us. And in Europe, a lot of biofuel actually comes in the form of biodiesel. A significant portion of that is actually palm oil based, kind of a first generation diesel biofuel. By really looking at these alternatives, being able to use cellulosic material, I think we have the potential to really save a lot of rainforest, so we're not converting that really rich ecosystem into palm plantations, which really don't provide the biodiversity, don't hold the carbon as well to really keep our CO2 levels down to mitigate climate change. So it's really interesting how these systems all interplay. So it's a significant consideration.
Glenn in Menominee Falls has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Glenn.
Good morning, or good afternoon, I should say. The reason I called is, I guess farmers are too busy to listen to public radio, but I don't think that's a good idea to be taking these corn stalks and et cetera off the land. That is, should be kept on the fields to hold the ground and help build up the soil over time. I think that's kind of a silly thing to be doing myself.
Yeah. You know, and other farmers, actually, Glenn, have raised that issue, and other non-farmers have raised it as well. John, you want to tackle that?
Yeah, Glenn, thanks for bringing up that question, because it is a really important one. And overarching in our research is that this whole framework of sustainability, we really need to look at all the facets, environmental, economic, social, and maintaining good soil health is really fundamental to sustainability for the farmers. And this is a whole area that we're really quite keen on considering. And it's very clear that a significant portion of the stover does need to be returned to the soil. It provides organic matter that keeps the soil loose and friable, holds a lot of the nutrients as well. But I think especially as our corn industry has developed, the amount of stover, this residue material, just continues to increase. We end up with more and more biomass per acre. And it's gotten to the point where it actually is problematic for the corn growers. If you leave all that stover, it's actually can be difficult to plant into. And actually, it gets to be a bit of a impediment to planting a crop and getting a crop to germinate the next year. And so, there's some research that indicates that taking a portion of that material really can be a win-win situation in terms of having a real sustainable, farming system along these lines. And we need to look at it almost on a field-by-field basis. What type of soil is there? What's the climate like? What Sure. crop is going to be going in? So it's a very dynamic situation where the farmer is really going to have to be a part of that decision-making process in terms of how much stover to take, how much to leave behind to make sure that we're really caring for the soil.
So one really great aspect of being a part of this center as a scientist and an entomologist is just what John laid out about the thinking of how you're going to sustainably produce the biomass, the corn stover, the whatever, to be converted to a fuel, and what can you actually take from the land to do this is an integral part of the thinking in our whole center. And so I immediately accept and have the constraint that I don't get all of it. I'm going to get a portion of it, and I better do the best job with mm-hmm. the portion I get. And that will be a way to make this industry actually work and roll out and be this great word, sustainable.
There you go. Thank you very much, Glenn, for calling. I appreciate your call. We have a Facebook question from Mary Beth. My son is looking for ways to increase the electrical output of decaying material. He's a seventh grader. This is a science fair project. How would he choose and obtain enzymes that will speed up decay? Human or dog waste is obvious, but icky. So perhaps sawdust or compost? Brian Fox, what do you think?
I'm puzzled as to exactly what, if you could explain your experiment a little more. I'm a little confused as to what you're trying to accomplish there.
Yeah, it is. I'm not quite sure.
I can't. One possibility is the Boyce Thompson Institute at Cornell University actually has an education program where they do have a high school activity where students can actually use, some enzymes to break down cellulosic material. And I think, we're going to see more of these types of opportunities. This is something we're interested in GLBRC as well. How can we actually allow students to be doing this research as well? How can they be hands-on with exactly these types of experiments? So, your student is on the cutting edge in terms of what's possible, in the classroom. I would, recommend a little plug, glbrc.org. If you go to the education tab on that website, you'll actually get to a whole suite of activities which students can do for either, a science fair type project, or teachers can adapt to use in the classroom as well.
Yeah. So your student may be able to adapt the things for filter paper and others to sawdust.
Exactly.
That might be a good
that
clue
might be the way to go.
Point.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah. Again, where does she go?
glbrc.org. So, and actually, if you get to the education tab, you'll find the contact information for myself, John Greenler. If you want to send me an email, I can point you to some more specific materials as well. Always glad to be in touch with folks who are interested in education work.
Absolutely. And We also have your site posted on my Facebook page as well. So just go to the Larry Mueller Show if you forgot everything else. Remember that, and you'll find handily there the site and a link to that site. And here we are out of time. Brian, thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry. Thanks.
And John, as always, it goes fast, doesn't it?
Really a pleasure, Larry. It does. That's true. Yeah,
a quick 45 minutes today with John Greenler, Director of the Education and Outreach Program for the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. And Brian Fox, it's his first visit, professor in the UW-Madison Department of Biochemistry. And he's a GLBRC project leader. So I tell you, they're doing some really interesting stuff, aren't they, with the enzymes? And we'll, I'm sure, be learning more about it as time goes on. Tomorrow, Frank Armstrong talks with us about investing. And David Rellis and Jeff Brown answer questions about an affordable attorney. Stay with us.
Join me, Michael Feldman, and the whole What Do You Know crew for live shows this December, right here in Madison, including the infamous Holiday Party on Saturday morning, December 17th. I hope you'll join us. Call Campus Arts Ticketing at 608-262-2201 or click over to notmuch.com for details.
Support for WPR comes from American Players Theater in Spring Green, presenting the musical The Gift of the Magi November 20th through December 18th, with events before and after most performances.